Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and this is a special presentation of our program. We have been asked to do a special to focus upon that legacy of Martin Luther King, where his concern was for the sovereignty of human life, the ability to go through life, having a quality of life that has now been denied to so many. So today, in many different manifestations, I'll be sharing my own commentaries as well as reports from others showing you where we're at, how we got here, our loss of humanistic priorities, and some of the solutions necessary. For example, I'll be talking about our student loans bringing back indentured labor from Ryan McNamara. I'll be also talking about if you think that your pensions are protected, those of you who've worked hard your whole life and are still working or have retired, they are not. Even though the Constitution of some states states that you will get your money, the high probability is that you will not, because the state budget solutions show that promises made, promises broken, unfunded liabilities, $4.7 trillion. That's correct. The betrayal of retirees and taxpayers continues as state governments fail to change their faulty pensions accounting. So we will deal with this with State Budget Solutions by Joe Esposito. We'll also look at the cost of privatization. Without much public discussion at all, communities all over America, in order to raise money for their budgets, have been turning over everything from parking meters to bridge tolls to water delivery and collection to private corporations. Today, from Ellen Dannon, Truth Out, the cost of privatization hidden in plain sight. Also, if you think your money is safe, your savings, everything you have in the bank, whether you're a person or a business, think again. Right now, the Cyprus-style bank bail-ins to take your deposits and your pensions. It is a global banker's coup. We'll examine that. More than half of the U.S. public health, the public school students live in poverty, according to the newest report. That's over 51% of all the children in the United States in schools are living in poverty, some in dire poverty, including over 40% of the students in New York State. The evils of Big Pharma exposed by Yoah Hakpoian. This is important because it shows who the power people are. Why are we so broke? Even if you're a responsible person economically and you have a job and you have a quality of life income, you could burn through that in no time at all if you get sick. How'd that happen? Big Pharma, working in association with big medicine in the hospitals and the insurance companies, they make sure that whatever money you have, they're going to get. I'll give you the details on that today. Also, doctors, specialists in medicine are making out very well, but the average physician is not. The bankrupt government is slashing payments to doctors by 43%. Medicare patients are going to be rejected nationwide. You all bought into Obamacare if you were the average American. You shouldn't. It is a lie, it is a deception, it is one of the greatest frauds in the history of America. Shame on the corporate Democrats for promoting it. And now I'll show you what you have reaped. The coming war on your pensions from Professor Michael Hudson. Also today, many of us believe that they have been intentionally taking over curriculums, textbooks, redefining what teaching should be, taking over the school systems, privatizing schools. This is pure and simple authoritarianism and the assault on public education. Barbarians at the Gate, Professor Henry Giroux. And who owns America? The most shocking interview that has never happened by John Rappaport, a reporter who I have a lot of respect for, that will give you some verbatim quotes that should have made headlines and didn't. U.S. corporations top the list of those living in a magical fairyland of tax dodging. In fact, the 300 largest corporations and financial institutions, names like Pepsi-Cola, FedEx, J.P. Morgan, Amazon, have created complex tax avoidance schemes using the small European nation of Luxembourg to funnel billions of dollars of profits away from the countries where they actually do business. That's according to leaked documents obtained and analyzed by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. I've said for a long time, we've got it all wrong. All wrong. You think that taxing corporations at a higher percentage will make a difference? It makes no difference because they have tens of thousands of pages of the tax law, hiring the best tax lawyers, CPAs. They don't pay any taxes. None. Then what's the solution? I'll share that. As you see, we have a lot to go over. I don't know how much of this I'll be able to get to, but I will get to a lot of it. Let's begin with something that impacts a lot of people. Before the latest crisis in the economy in 2007, the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States was not home foreclosure. It was medical problems. People simply were going broke because of catastrophic illness, and also because the hospitals, both profit and nonprofit, and the people running those hospitals, and the insurance industry, and the pharmaceutical industry, and the specialties of medicine were working together to exploit as much money from every patient as humanly possible. I've interviewed hundreds of physicians and nurses at just one conference that I was one of the keynote speakers before in Chicago. And during my stay there, where there was about 7,000 physicians, I asked them, just be honest with me, how much money do you figure to make out of a patient? And I had people who were brutally honest, saying, well, there's a game that's played, and that is when you see the patient beginning to get better, you can change the diagnosis and hence change and restart all over again, reboot the entire process of having that patient take different medications, even though the original condition is improved and they may not even have another condition. Overtesting, having too many doctors intervening with the patient. One of the doctors, a woman, MD, PhD from San Francisco, said she's stopping medicine because she cannot stand what it has become. Also because she found that in some cases she received as little as $1 reimbursement from insurance on caring for patients. And she actually said that she keeps these $1 checks because if you told someone you treated a patient and the cost might be $500 or $600 or $1,000 and you got a dollar reimbursement, no one would believe you. And then I ask other physicians in the room, how many of you received a dollar, one single dollar for treating a patient? And all these hands went up. Almost every hand went up. The public has not been aware of how absolutely broken, failed, and corrupt our entire, I mean entire, medical industrial complex is. Do you have honest physicians? Yes. Do you have medicines that work? Absolutely. Are we exemplary at saving people's lives if they have a heart attack, a stroke, a car accident, reconnecting a severed finger? Yes. That's about 12% of medicine, which means 88% of medicine is corrupt and kills, but it's not being changed. So, as we have learned on this program over a long period of time, just because Americans are required to have health insurance coverage under regulation contained in the Affordable Care Act, that does not mean that they have access to care. And there's the great disconnect. If you recall, the entire purpose behind Obamacare, according to the president and the law's backers, was only to ensure something like 14 to 15 million people, because at the time the measure was being debated, the vast majority of Americans, well over 80%, had health insurance. What's more, the bulk of those insured had private sector plans, and most were insured through employers. The number of Americans on taxpayer-subsidized coverage like Medicare was minimal. Obamacare is beginning to change that dynamic. According to J.D. Hayes from Natural News, quote, as noted by the administration's new enrollment figures released a couple of weeks ago, according to CNN Money, some 8.7 million more Americans are now enrolled in Medicare or Medicaid as of this past summer. And Medicaid expansion is at the heart of the Affordable Care Act. Now, here's where it gets tricky. There is no doubt that because of the Affordable Care Act, more Americans are actually covered under health insurance. The bad news is that the insurance coverage is going to be little more than coverage in name only. It's a pseudo-coverage. I'm going to quote from the New York Times now. Quote, just as millions of people are gaining insurance through Medicaid, the program is poised to make deep cuts in payments to many doctors, prompting some physicians and consumer advocates to warn that the reductions could make it more difficult for Medicaid patients to obtain care, end quote. This is how the law was designed, intentionally, without our input at all. Though I must say that I sent letters with Cricket Vitae and a whole article, if I could testify, on behalf of the consumer. But no one that I know who applied was invited to testify. Instead, the only people selected to testify before Max Baucus's, who's now our ambassador to China, he's an insider's insider, were all pro Big Med, Big Pharma, Big Health Insurance, no one from the outside. So, by placing more Americans on a taxpayer-supported program, then cutting payments to the very doctors who were expected to see and treat the newly covered, you end up with doctors saying, I don't need this. I'm having a hard enough time paying my overhead and all of the paperwork and bureaucracy and the malpractice insurance. No. And they're leaving medicine. The New York Times, quote, the Affordable Care Act provided a big increase in Medicaid payments for primary care in 2013 and 14, but the increase expired last week, just weeks after the Obama administration told the Supreme Court that doctors and other providers had no legal right to challenge the adequacy of payments they received from Medicaid, end quote. So, not only is the Obama administration, per the Obamacare law, looking to cut payments to doctors, but the White House is further arguing that doctors have no legal right to question the amount of money they're paid to see a patient. How's that for catch-22? So quite simply, it's doomed to fail. Well, doctors have challenged it. Their solution will be to simply stop seeing Medicaid patients, because the administration's wielding of the Obamacare law is leaving them little financial choice. Now, according to a study by the Urban Institute, the New York Times reported the cuts to doctors will vary state by state, but the average cut will be 43%. So, more Americans are being covered by a tax-supported entitlement that is cutting payments to providers by half. That will result in fewer providers seeing Medicaid patients. Primary care family practice physicians, especially that typically earns less than other specialties, and one that is already short thousands of doctors, will be especially hard hit by the cuts. According to Stephen Zuckerman, a health economist at the Urban Institute, he goes on to say that cuts of 50% or more could hit doctors in states like California, Florida, and New York, where there are large concentrations of Medicaid patients. Obama has proposed extending the current Medicaid payment schedule in the current budget, but that is no indication that there is enough support, and it will surely get killed based upon the number of Republicans in the House and the Senate. Doctors groups, meanwhile, are already warning that access to care will suffer. for patients on federally subsidized health coverage plans. In fact, Dr. David Fleming, president of the American College of Physicians, which represents internal medicine specialists, told the Times some patients would have less access to care after the cuts. So what is the problem? The problem was that there was no transparency. There was no input. We should have been asking the following questions. Why are so many Americans sick? Why is cancer at such an epidemic level? What in our environment, our lifestyle, behaviors contributing to it? The same for heart disease, inflammatory arthritis, and other conditions. What are we going to do about the tens of millions of Americans currently suffering from memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or will be within the next 10 years? What can prevent disease? What national program could we have implemented with celebrities and Surgeon General to motivate Americans to get healthier, especially children? None of that. What about foods, antioxidants, nutrients, juicing, detoxing? None of that. What about the almost 40 million Americans suffering from clinical depression and anxiety disorders and taking medications that can kill them or cause them to commit suicide? None of that. What about meditation, mindfulness, and other mental exercises? Zip. So from the very beginning, what we should have had, and I believe what Martin Luther King would have advocated, was a single universal health care policy where you also cap all expenses for any medical treatment to the institution and you have charitable hospitals. That way you won't have a surgeon billing and receiving $250,000 to sew up a surgical cut. True story. Two of them. And another paid, I think, $68,000 for simply observing an operation. How many people will get money if you had universal health care? We would save at least $1.5 trillion a year, plus we would save an additional $1 trillion with an adequate preventative program. Take the profit out of medicine. Take the profit out of keeping people healthy. And you're looking at about $2 trillion right there. Currently, we're spending $3.2 trillion. That's the largest single expense in the United States. In fact, it's so big, it's bigger than the national defense and security apparatus combined with education. That's how big it is. And yet there's not a single effort to do anything about it except to exploit more ways to profit from it. All the while, we have one of the worst healthcare outcomes in the world. We rank terrible in infant mortality, in longevity, in quality of life, but we rank right at the top in obesity and diseases like heart disease and cancer and death from them. So if the existing medical paradigm was efficacious and safe, we wouldn't have the number one cause of death and injury in the United States, medical influence, meaning iatrogenesis, meaning your doctor and the medical paradigm causes more people to die each year, fully documented, and be injured than any other single event. Heart attacks, stroke, cancer, diabetes don't even come close to how many people your doctor kills. Now, you might imagine that if you're killing over 20 years, over 10 million citizens minimally, that that's medical genocide and someone would ask some questions. But no one's asking anything. So that is a big concern. Now, when we take a look at how do we get all this happening, I believe that what we have to do is look at Big Pharma. If there's one group of people who are absolutely nefarious in their attitudes and actions, their ability to control the U.S. Public Health Service and all its divisions, the National Cancer Institute, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the National Institutes of Aging, and National Institutes of Mental Health, it's Big Pharma. They virtually control everything that goes on there. Now, there are honest and diligent, concerned scientists and officials working there, but it's the political appointees who control it. And these people are appointed based upon the revolving door. One good example is Gerberding, who headed the CDC, immediately promoting vaccines, unlimited vaccines. She wouldn't give a damn if your kid had 10,000 vaccines. She goes to work from the CDC, right up Merck, heading their vaccine division. And yet no one thinks that there's a thing wrong with that, except those of us who believe that these are gross conflict of interest. And that's rampant in every federal agency, in all of our legislative processes. You go to work for the very persons and corporations you were supposed to be overseeing. So where's the fairness? Where is the, you can't do this, this is not healthy. You can't make this and sell it, this aspartame, this DDT, this glyphosate. You can't engage these products into the marketplace because they have not been tested safe and effective. You have none of that. Instead, what you have is you have rampant corruption in every governmental agency. In my personal opinion, every single government agency should be completely, totally closed, disbanded, and let these people find a job doing something honest and replace these with agencies that are run by competent, qualified, humanistic, highly motivated, independent scientists, physicians, policymakers who care about the public's needs first. We would no longer have cancer-causing agents. We would no longer have more fluoride in the water. We would no longer have apologies made for sugar and the amount it's have. You would have these things dealt with. You cannot reform this system. It is beyond corrupt. Now, at the heart of this is Big Pharma. The history of the last several centuries is one in which a handful of these oligarch families, primarily from Europe and the United States, have been controlling governments and wars to ruthlessly consolidate and maximize both power and control over the Earth's most precious resources to promote their idea of a totalitarian fascist government that exercise absolute power and control over the entire global population. Now, this group of oligarch families have systematically and effectively eliminated competition under the deceptive misnomer of a free enterprise system. Modernization is synonymous with globalization, privatization, and militarization. Subsequently, an extremely small number of humans, representing a privileged ruling elite, has imposed a global caste system that's hatched its long-term diabolical plan to create a one-world government. Sadly, at this tumultuous moment in our human history, it's never been closer to materialization. Let me share some deep insights from Yoa Hagpoyan. In the early stages of the 21st century, we have a ruling elite. It's not the 1%, by the way, because 1% of our population would be 3 million people. Richard Gale, our researcher, scholar in residence, myself, spent a year looking at who controls which industries control the policies of various governments, international banks, international settlement bank, the European Central Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Business Roundtable, the ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, because if you want to know who the people are, you have to look at who are the power players in these multiple groups, which ones sit on multiple boards, and how much impact they have. The Federal Reserve in and of itself is not the problem. It's the 12 banks that serve the Federal Reserve and who have the controlling interest in those banks. And we did. And we published a paper on this. We're only dealing with about 147 companies. That's it. We're dealing with maybe, at most, about 4,000 people in the entire world who control over 40% of all the assets in the world. And I'll bet that you wouldn't name me two of them, because these are not the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers together are chump change for what these other people have and how they control and they remain hidden. But these are the true ruling elite, and they manipulate the 7 billion people into a global economic system of feudalism. Now, through pillaging and plundering the earth, setting up a cleverly deceptive financial system that controls the production and flow of fiat paper money, using U.S. dollar as the standard international currency, though I predict in the next 24 months that will no longer be the primary currency, reserve currency. I believe there'll be other currencies. They have turned the whole world civilization and nations into indentured servants, hopelessly in debt due to their grand theft planet. With Russia and China spearheading a shift away from the U.S. dollar and petrodollar, and many smaller nations following their lead, a major shift in the balance of power is underway between Western European oligarchs, thus by design escalating calamity and crisis into overdrive. I believe it'll begin to show its impact this year, in the next 12 months. So by examining one aspect of this grand theft planet through the story of Big Pharma, one can accurately recognize and assess Big Pharma's success in its momentum-gathering power grab. Its story serves as a microcosm, perfectly illustrating and paralleling the macrocosm, which means larger macro, that is today's oligarch-engineered, highly successful New World Order nightmare coming true right before our eyes, and that's what we're up against. So by understanding how this came to manifest, we will better confront and challenge and oppose it. Remember, you don't defeat these people through the political system. It cannot be done. It is not possible. You cannot defeat them at the ballot box. What you do is you defeat them by no longer being in their power, no longer taking their drugs, seeing their doctors, buying their food, buying their cars, watching their television. That's how we defeat them and then create independent economies, independent of them. Every year, a handful of the biggest pharmaceutical corporations are a well-represented fixture among the most powerful Fortune 500 companies in the world. Now, the 12 largest drug companies and their 8 largest drug delivery companies, or otherwise known as drug channel companies, like wholesale drug distributors and chain pharmacies and pharmacy benefit managers, what are called PBMs, consist in total of only, are you ready for this, 20 companies. That's it. Of the Fortune 500, 20, and they only make up 4% of the Fortune 500, but they are so profitable, they have absolute economic and political power in the United States and worldwide. It is unprecedented. The median revenue of the drug channel companies last year was $95.1 billion. That's the median, with a median net profit. That's after all their expenses, which are, in point of fact, you know, everything that anyone can spend money on, private jets and fabulous meals and ski vacations. You take away all that and all their research, all their marketing, all their advertising, all their lobbying, all that is deducted. They're left with 2.9% over the year before. The top 12 drug manufacturing companies held a median net revenue of $17.5 billion. Substantial. And you have to understand Walgreens, Rite Aid, CVS overall maintain higher revenues and positions in the Fortune 500 list. Their profit margins are not nearly as immense as the pharmaceutical manufacturers, which are almost 4 times more profitable. How's that possible? Big Pharma's top 11 corporations generated net profits in just one decade of nearly $750 billion net. That is net profit alone. The net profit, not the gross profit, not the total sales, just the net, what they get to take home after they paid taxes, what they put in their bank accounts just last year. The net profit for last year amongst those top 11 amounted to $85 billion. The majority of these large pharmaceuticals are headquartered in the U.S., including the top four, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Merck, Eli Lilly, along with Abbott and Bristol-Myers Squibb. The healthcare research company IMS Health projects worldwide sales of pharma drugs to exceed $1 trillion last year. With that kind of obscenely powerful money to throw around, what Big Pharma wants, Big Pharma always gets. Let me give you an example. If you were to have a heart attack after taking a statin drug that was proven to be caused by the statin drug, you could sue the manufacturer. And that's true with a chemotherapy drug or an antipsychotic drug or an anti-inflammatory drug. But if every kid in America died tomorrow, every kid that had received a vaccine, no one could sue anyone. You would have to take your case to a vaccine court. Every manufacturer, which is a pharmaceutical company that creates vaccines, has been identified. They got their lobbyists to get Dan Quayle and others to exempt them when he was vice president. And Bush and Clinton, they all sided with Big Pharma. And no one has been responsible for trying to undo that. So they should be legally responsible. If they were legally responsible for the outcome of their vaccines, you wouldn't see a single vaccine on the market, not one. And that would be a good thing. Because they hire the scientists and physicians to say that these are safe and effective. We have proven with over 36 separate scholarly articles, fully referenced, capable of being taken into a court of law, right up to the Supreme Court, that this is all scientific fraud. We've done three multi-award-winning documentaries, The Silent Epidemic, Vaccine Nation, and Autism Made in the USA, that it is the primary cause of autism and other disabilities. And yet they win. So, just as the oligarchs buy, own, and control national governments to do their sleazy bidding, Big Pharma, as an extension of those same oligarchs, does too. Perhaps what makes Big Pharma unique in the United States is the industry outspends all others in laying down cold, hard cash into its lobbying efforts. Another word for bribing governments that includes not only the U.S. Congress and parliaments, but its U.S. federal regulator and bought and sold FDA. It's poured $2.7 billion into its lobbying interest, 42% more than the second most government corporate bribe, which happens to be its sister industry, big insurance. And it's this unholy trinity of the medical establishment, personified by the American Medical Association, embedded insurance industry that wrote Obamacare into law, and Big Pharma that makes U.S. the most costly, broken, corrupt, destructive healthcare system in the world. The structured system is designed and layered with built-in incentives at every tier to make and keep people sick, chronically dependent on their drugs, which are worthless and dangerous, and try to mask the symptoms rather than cure or eradicate the root cause of disease. Plenty of the empirical evidence exists that confirm concentrated diabolical efforts have been made to ruin the lives of pioneering heroes who have come up with possible cures for AIDS and cancer and other terminal illnesses. Obviously, their work poses a serious threat to medical status quo. Hence, their treatments have all been effectively suppressed by conventional medicine. Bottom line, if humans are healthy, the healthcare industry does not survive. Thus, it's in its own inherently self-serving interest to promote illness in the name of wellness. Also, because natural healing substances cannot be patented, Big Pharma has done its sinister best to squelch any and all knowledge and information that come from far more affordable means of alternative health sources that explore ancient traditional cultures, medicinal use of hemp alone, with thousands of other plants and roots that could threaten drug profits and power a Big Pharma in modern medicine as they're currently practiced and monopolized. Another cold, hard reality is pharmaceutical drugs, especially when consumed to manage chronic disease and symptoms, cause severe side effects that also damage, harm, and kill. The most prescribed drugs of all are painkillers that typically are highly addictive. Big Pharma will, with the help of their global army of doctors, have purposely and calculatingly turned a large percentage of us, especially in the United States, into hardcore drug addicts, both physically and psychologically addicted to artificial synthetic substances that are detrimental to our health and well-being. More than three-quarters of American citizens over the age of 50 are currently taking prescribed medication. Three-quarters. One in four women in their 40s and 50s is taking antidepressants. Though the U.S. contains just 4% of the world's population, we consume 50% of all prescription medication and a phenomenal 80% of the world's supply of painkillers. Those who admit to taking prescription drugs on average are taking four different prescription drugs daily, and that's before they become a senior citizen. Then it jumps up astronomically. Some are taking over 17 different medications. So taking massive amounts of prescription drugs are causing an epidemic that's part of a sinister plan to squeeze yet more profit out of a system designed to keep humans chronically unhealthy. Even more alarming is the fact that death by medical error, as I mentioned earlier, is the number one cause of death in the United States. Even the American Medical Association in its journal said it was the third largest killer, but they did not take into account things such as death by infections in hospitals, bed sores, death by malnutrition that you got from being in a hospital. They missed about four categories. We did not. Because doctors now are forced to rely so heavily on drug companies for information about why what they prescribe, they're ill-equipped and ill-informed in their lack of adequate knowledge and training to understand what all the interactive drugs are doing to toxically harm their human guinea pigs they call patients. We're finding out that the cumulative and synergistic effect of polyprescribed drug use is frequently a lethal cocktail to millions of human beings on this planet. Combine that with the negative effects of our air, water, food, and alcohol, illicit drugs, and the health dangers increase dramatically. Look at the current damage done by overprescribing antibiotics. Studies have shown us that too much antibiotics caused transgenerational permanent DNA damage. The 20,000 times a year in the U.S. alone that antibiotics are prescribed are highly toxic and damaging to the nervous system. On top of that, they simply don't work anymore. The epidemic of transmutated bacterial infections and parasites that invade and infest the digestive tract in particular, killing good bacteria and spread to other internal organs, have become highly resistant because of overuse of antibiotics. Big Pharma and doctors know all this. I wrote about this in 1974 in a best-selling book, How to Get Rid of the Toxins in Your Body and Body Pollution, a different book. I was talking about the epidemic of antibiotic overuse in 1974. So these people are aware of this. Then look at what we are now learning about Big Pharma's vaccines and the wanton, reckless endangerment of children and pregnant women with toxic levels of mercury or aluminum, increasing the rates of autism, brain damage, and even death. The criminal cover-up by Big Pharma and the government is egregious. Flu vaccines have recently been exposed that are totally ineffective, along with the horrific damage being done to humans worldwide. Instead of preventing and decreasing illness, vaccines too often have had the opposite effect, exponentially increasing illness, causing irreversible damage, and even death to thousands of unsuspecting victims, mostly living in third world nations. India's Supreme Court is currently looking into charging Bill Gates and his foundation with criminal harm to many of its citizens, especially children injured or killed by his global vaccine program. A growing number of critics believe Gates is one of the people who believes in reducing the world's population. Well, that's his choice. We've always had eugenicists. Margaret Mead was the most famous. People believe that those who are not contributing really shouldn't be having a place in this world. But that is for another debate. What we're now looking at is Big Pharma is being sponsored also by Gates and his foundation. And Big Pharma can do whatever it wants with any drug it wants, anywhere in the world it wants, and it has a bad reputation. to further control the global health system, Big Pharma has largely dictated what's been taught in medical schools through North America, heavily subsidizing them as a means of dictating the conventional dogma that standard curriculum down to even textbooks. Several years ago, a revolt at Harvard amongst medical students and faculty went public. For a long time now, doctors have been educated primarily to treat their patients with drugs, in effect becoming drug pushing. Pharmaceutical whores, mere foot soldiers in Big Pharma's war on health. Starting in the final year of med school, Big Pharma insidiously hones in on the young med students, seductively wining and dining prospective physicians, showering them with money in the form of educational handouts, gifts, trips, and perks galore to recruit its legions of loyal, thoroughly indoctrinated drug peddlers around the world. Thousands of doctors in the United States are on Big Pharma's payrolls. Typically, early on in their careers, physicians are unwittingly co-opted into this corrupt malaise of an irreparable system that's owned and operated by Big Pharma. I've spoken personally with people who are top agents working for pharmaceutical companies. In fact, the most famous, a legendary sales marketing person for Big Pharma, the number one in America salesperson, spent an entire day being filmed recently by me, telling all the secrets. This person said, "Have you ever seen any unattractive sales reps? You always see young, attractive, well-groomed, smiling people going to the doctor's office. Do you have any idea how much money we spend to get control of a doctor's prescription habits? Do you know how often we restock their pharmacy that they sell to their patients and we restock it for free?" And so it goes. And here's why the drug companies control the global healthcare empire. Since 1990, Big Pharma has been pumping at least $150 million that we know about, and doubt lots more that we don't know about, buying off politicians who no longer represent the interest of their voting public. Thanks to big law, completely corrupt, we have so many laws we don't need, and laws we do need, they're not going to pass. Via the last Supreme Court's decision, current campaign financing laws permit unlimited carte blanche bribery across the board. The power of America's most wealthy and powerful are able to fill the pockets of corrupt politicians, there's only a handful who are not, with absolutely no oversight. And though the corporate buy-off of other nations around the globe may not appear quite so extreme and blatantly criminal as in the United States, international drug companies make certain that every national government allows full access and flow of their prescription drugs into each nation, including rubber-stamped approval of each nation's regulatory body to ensure global maximization of record profits. But because far more money is spent on the healthcare industry in the United States, twice as much as the next nation, and equal to the next 10 combined, it's no surprise that helpless Americans end up having to pay far higher exorbitant costs for their made-in-USA drugs than anywhere else on the planet. The average U.S. citizen spends about $1,000 on pharmaceutical drugs a year. Big Pharma also invests more dollars in advertising than any other industry in America, transmitting its seductively deceptive message direct to the consumer, explicitly giving them marching orders to request specific drugs from their doctors. In 2012 alone, pharmaceutical corporations paid nearly $3.5 billion to market their drugs on television, radio, internet, magazines, saturating every media outlet. Their message? Pleasure, relief, peace of mind, joy, love, happiness, and an erection. No problem or pain in life can't be conquered by a quick fix, compliments of Big Pharma. Now, much of Big Pharma's success over the last couple of decades has been the result of specifically targeting special new populations to con and win over, resorting to creating new diseases and maladies to entice troubled, stressed out, gullible individuals into believing there's something abnormally wrong with them, that they are among always a growing segment of our population who quietly suffer from whatever discomforting symptoms and deficit and dysfunctions and ailments and syndromes and disorders that enterprising Big Pharma conveys to slyly invent, promote, package, and sell. This unethical con job, this snake oil salesman pitch is extremely alluring. It's called disease mongering, and drug companies have mastered it. saturating the market with their alluring, promising ads. Check out any half hour of national network news on television targeting the baby boomer and geriatric crowd. And you'll notice 95% of the commercials are all about big pharma. Of course, they pay big bucks for slick ads. They shrewdly target the oldsters, most apt to suffer health problems, but never to prevent a disease, never to help you get healthy. Just take their drugs. Also, in recent years, Big Pharma has become deceitfully masterful at repackaging, rebranding old medications at higher prices, ever in search of expanding consumers. It's a lot easier and far less money to engage in this unethical industry-wide practice of recycling an old pill than in manufacturing a new one. Prozac became the biggest drug sold until it was learned that it caused so many people to kill themselves or others, especially adolescents. Then Eli Lilly deceptively repackaged and relabeled it under the less threatening name Seraphim at a much higher price, tailored to target unsuspecting women seeking relief from menstrual pain. And like Prozac, as another selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting antidepressant, Paxil was suddenly repackaged as the cure-all for shyness under the guise of treating social anxiety, which doesn't exist, taking full advantage of knowing that millions of humans feel unsure of themselves dealing with strangers and groups, Big Pharma to the rescue, exploiting people's nervousness by clinically labeling it as a social anxiety and reintroducing the antidepressant pink pill as their panacea to personal happiness, lifelong self-confidence, and success in life. This most prevalent industry pattern of reusing the same old drugs all dressed up with new custom design names for new purposes on new custom design populations for yet another price gouging is nothing less than resorting to a predatory practice of criminally false advertising. And perhaps as sinister as any aspect of the drug business is how Big Pharma has completely taken over the completely 100% corrupt FDA. A recent Harvard study slammed the FDA, making the accusation that it simply, quote, cannot be trusted, end quote, because it's owned and operated by Big Pharma. With complete autonomy and control, now pharmaceutical companies knowingly market drugs that carry high-risk dangers for consumers. But because they so tightly control its supposed regulatory gatekeeper, drugs are commonly mass-marketed, and before the evidence of potential harm becomes overwhelming, by design, when the slow bureaucratic wheels turn, issuing a drug recall, billions in profit have already been unscrupulously reaped at the deadly expense of the victims. Additionally, doctors, pharmacists, and patients rarely even hear about important recalls due to dangerous side effects or contamination. Yet hundreds of big pharmaceutical drugs are recalled every year. Many FDA-approved drugs like Fenfen, Vioxx, Zohodra, and Celebrex kill hundreds before they eventually are removed from the shelf. This withholding of the truth from professional and public consumers is yet more evidence that Big Pharma protects its profits more than people. So in conclusion, this evil practice that keeps repeating itself is proof that Big Pharma is a criminal racket. It no longer needs outside independent research demonstrating a drug's efficacy. The FDA is controlled. Currently, research is conducted and compiled by the pharmaceutical industry itself to fraudulently show positive results from methodologically flawed drug trials, when in reality a drug proves either ill-effective at doing what it's purported to do or downright harmful. Research outcomes only need to show that the drug outperforms a placebo, not other older drugs, and that's how it works. Similarly to shady personal moving seamlessly in and out of government, public service to think tanks, to universities, to foundations, to private law, to corporations, to lobbyists, the same applies to the heads of the FDA moving to and from Big Pharma. Unfortunately, this is how our government, at every level, in every agency, has been working for decades. And behind all this, we have the oligarchs, all protected, all hidden from public responsibility and public scrutiny. And that's just an example, one example. I could have done the same thing with the oil cartels, the banking cartels. I chose Big Pharma as the example. Now, how bad is it out there for the normal American? According to The Guardian, In a recent review, it is so bad that more than half the U.S. public school system students live in poverty. 51% to be exact. That's an awful lot of kids who are going to school. And it's hitting over 15 million kids. And that's according to the Southern Education Foundation. Found that every passing year, an increasing number of states are seeing needy children in their classrooms. Yet what's being done to change this? Well, if you live in Mississippi, they're the worst. 71% of all the children in school, public schools down there, are low-income families. In Texas, it's 60%. Alabama's 58%. But even in 19 other states, including New York, low-income students make up 49% of the state's public school enrollment. What are we doing to help the families so they're no longer in low income? What are we doing to help them get sustainable jobs with a living wage? We are not. But we could be doing something. We choose not to do something. And that is the problem. Now, if you think your state is going to be giving you your pensions at the amount that you deserve and earned over your working career, think again. From the State Budget Solutions, quote, State Budget Solutions' latest research reveals that state public pension plans are underfunded by $4.7 trillion, up from $4.1 trillion in 2013. Overall, the combined plan's funds status has dipped 3 percentage points to 36%. Split among all Americans, the unfunded liabilities is over $15,000 per person. This spells trouble for the millions of baby boomers who are quickly approaching retirement age and expect to collect their pensions promised to them by government officials. Furthermore, state taxpayers who are not government employees will also feel the pinch, which could result in reduced government services. A larger and larger portion of the state's budgets must be allocated to cover the public pension shortfall. And then it goes into how bad it is. It's really bad. And to the worst states, just to give an idea how mismanaged these pensions have been and how absolutely inefficient this is, California. Their unfunded liabilities, $754 billion. Illinois, $331 billion. New York, $307 billion. Texas, $296 billion. Ohio, $289 billion. New Jersey, $200 billion. Florida, $183 billion. Pennsylvania, $181 billion. Michigan, $136 billion. Massachusetts, $104 billion. That's an awful lot of money that they do not have and will not have in order to put the money back into the pension funds. And yet the pension managers, the people that oversee these pensions, they've made out terrifically. And finally, are student loans bringing back indentured labor? From Ryan McNamara. Quote, the American system of financial higher education is broken. Instead of freeing students to use their talents in creative ways, it saddles them with a form of oppressive debt to the detriment of themselves and society. Indentured servants made up a large part of the workforce in colonial America. These were typically young people from Europe who paid for their passage to North America by working for a set number of years, usually between 4 to 7, as virtual slaves. This form of indentured labor disappeared from American society in the early 1900s, but the staggering burden of debt incurred by today's college students, in which young people pay huge fees for the opportunity to work for a living wage, has been compared to a modern form of indenture. In taking on such indebtedness, students are only trying to keep pace with the ever-rising cost of a college degree. Over the last 40 years, tuition and fees at U.S. schools have increased almost 1,200%. Far more than housing, food, and even medical care. Public colleges, traditionally the educators of the working class students, no longer provide an affordable alternative to high-priced private institutions. Sharp cuts in state funding in recent years have shifted more and more of the cost to students in state and city schools, with an inevitable rise in student debt. The social costs of these relentless inflations in higher education are substantial. At a time when so many new jobs call for college education skills, the percentage of high school graduates enrolling in college has actually been declining from 70.1% in 2009 to 65% last year. The so-called investment in a college education day will still pay off over the long run in terms of higher income, depending upon the type of major you have. But what about the cost? The debt is crippling. To start with, the price of a college education is the charge people have to pay to gain access to a labor market that makes it essentially a transportation fee in labor studies. That's a charge people have to pay to gain access to a labor market. And here's the rub. Student debt cannot be discharged. Unlike many other forms of debt in the United States, such as credit cards and mortgage payments, you cannot declare bankruptcy to get rid of it. The hang time of student loans is effectively limitless. An estimated 2 million Americans 60 years old and over are still paying off student loans. And given the continued rise to college costs, this number is sure to skyrocket in the coming years. On top of this, collection agencies have extraordinary powers to collect on student loans, powers that far exceed their ability to extract payments from other kinds of debtors. They can garnish wages, take income tax returns, demand a portion of your Social Security checks. Such taxes can force those who fall behind on payments into a death spiral of inescapable death. Andrew Ross, professor of sociology at New York University, who focused on labor issues, sees a clear parallel to traditional forms of indenture. Quote, "We have reached the point in the 21st century knowledge economy where a majority of skilled employees must go into debt in order to labor. Practically speaking, indebtedness is the condition of entry into the workforce." And so it goes. And until such time as a society we recognize what we are doing and stop this, debt peonage and debtors' prisons, then it will only continue, placing stress upon the person, those who are responsible, their family, and destroying the quality of life. What should we do? We should forgive all interest on all student debt. We should then fund public education in all states. So for those who want to go to private school and pay all you want, you have that right. But for those who cannot afford to go to a private school and want a quality public education, you should have tuition-free universities in every state. We could do that. We could do that with just the money that the lotteries bring in each state. But I doubt that that will happen because of how the system is controlled and who controls it. I didn't have a chance to get to everything I wanted today, but that will be for another time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.